This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
And welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 120. And today I have another new co-host. I have got with me the legendary Bill Oakley. And I'm here with the legendary Henry Viola Hare. And you've got me also, Peter Higgins at Conquest 3 on Twitter. Welcome and welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Wherever you are in the world. Just to bring you up to speed, unfortunately, due to work commitments, the group will no longer be with us. The plan was to rotate Alex and Phil every other 2 weeks and have a quartet for you, but we're down to three because of Alex's work commitments. So we'll thank Alex for all his support and help with us for the previous podcast that he's been on. But going forward, it will be Henry and I with Phil on a rotated basis every other 2 weeks that Phil's available to come on. He'll be coming on. If you come on more frequently than that, he'll be with us. So we're blessed to have you, Phil. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Henry.
Right. First, Phil, what we want to do, because some that haven't seen you in all the different guises that you've and different hats that you've worn historically, don't know of you. There's only going to be a few, Phil, but for just those few, I just want to ask you to very, very briefly tell our global Twin Peaks guests and audience and everybody else that listens to this podcast who you are, where you've been, what you've done. Just a little brief one, mate. You know,
oh, okay.
So people know of your caliber.
Okay. In very simple terms, I am a writer. I write about investments and shares. I've been doing that for about 14 years now. And for the sort of 10 years, 12 years prior to that, I was an investment analyst, a stockbroking analyst in London for most of it, analysing various sectors of the London market. And I did that for about 10 years and decided I didn't want to do it anymore. Kind of fell out of love with it and then spent a bit of time thinking about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I've always liked writing. So I became a writer and started off working for Money Week. And it was there really where I think if it wasn't for the editor of Money Week, or the then editor of Money Week, a guy called John Stepek, who kind of sort of taught me how to write really, because there's a big difference in writing analyst reports to writing for, you know, the sort of general reader, private investor. So I owe him a great deal, actually, in terms of where I am now. I worked for them for a few years, and then I worked for SharePad, which obviously ShareScope, which is the sponsor of this podcast, and did a lot of sort of educational articles there, and also helped to develop the software, so the SharePad software. A lot of the features that are in there, I helped to develop. I'm still working for them now, actually, on a freelance basis. So I'm still writing regular articles for them on their website. And I'm also working behind the scenes, helping to make ShearPad better. And there's a lot going on behind the scenes, which will hopefully lead to ShearPad customers getting a better product going forward on what is already a very good product. And I moved on from ShareScope to the Investors Chronicle. I worked at the Investors Chronicle. And now I am a freelance. And I am doing work for ShareSpot, as I've just said, the Investors Chronicle, and a new project, or a relative new project, which is one that I'm particularly excited about, which is called Elite Companies. And that's with CityWire. And that's with Algie Hall, ex-colleague of mine at the Investors Chronicle, known to listeners on this podcast, I think. Dan Grote, who is an ex-Telegraph, and Miles Costello, who used to write the Tempest column for the Times. And yeah, so I'm doing quite a lot of work for them. So that's a good project. And now I'm here talking with you two.
Fantastic. You've mentioned some quality names there. A couple of friends of ours, you know, Algie Hall, John Stepek, you know, all the CityWire team, IC team as well. We know them as well. So it's brilliant to have you. But you failed to mention or even quote the name of this book, Phil. And I know you've said to me in the past, you want to rewrite it and you don't really want to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So ladies and gents that don't know about this book that I've been bashing for ages to recommend to people, it's called How to Pick Quality Shares by the one and only Phil Oakley. So if you haven't read this yet, haven't bought it yet, I'm going to recommend that you go and purchase this, even if Phil won't. Any comments, Phil?
That's fine. No, it's a good book. There's a lot of numbers in it. A lot of sort of, I wrote it. I mean, obviously there's a, if you read it, there's a lot of ShareSpot stuff in there. But one of the reasons that I wrote it was because a lot of the sort of analysis books and investment books got very heavy American bias. Always thought there was scope for a more UK type book. I think it's fair to say that, and there's still a lot of hopefully very useful stuff in there, but I would probably write it differently now, because in the sort of 6-7 years since then, your ideas change, your writing style changes. But yeah, I mean, anybody who wants to, you know, get into sort of analysing company accounts and businesses, I hope that would be a pretty understandable and sort of intermediate guide. It's not for complete beginners. You need to know your way around a little bit. But if you like looking to sort of step up and take your analysis on a bit further, I'm hoping that people would find that book useful.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for that. Right. I'm going to jump straight in now and just bring the markets up to speed. And then we're going to go to Henry introducing his first stock of the day. We had a bit of a rally today, ladies and gents, on the markets. All the indices, UK indices, were up, being carried again by the US markets overnight. And we'll see how they fare today. The biggest push on the FTSE 100 today, which was up 0.9%, up 68 points to 7,681, was BP. However, all five, the top five market capitalized companies, AstraZeneca was up 1.68%, Shell was up 0.73%, HSBC was up 2.07%, Unilever was up 1.05%, and BP, as I said, was up 5.4%. And the reason why BP was up today was basically they turned around and said £3 billion of quarterly profits is what they hit the markets with today. And they said they're going to do further buybacks. And basically the returns over the past 5 years have increased 43% beyond what the five-year average was. So everyone was cheering that today, and that carried the markets up. FTSE 250 didn't do too bad either, up 0.8%. FTSE AIM all share was up 0.5% and sitting comfortably at 754 now, and getting ever closer to that magic 800 if it can. We just need a bit of good news from elsewhere, a few more companies not being taken over but actually increasing their profits. and we'll see how that goes. Anything else you guys have seen regarding the reasons why the market's had a better day today than previously? Henry, Phil?
Well, it's funny you should mention BP, because I was reading an article this morning and I ought to have double checked the date on it. I could have sworn I was reading an article this morning saying that BP had put out reduced profits from expectations because the price of oil had come down so much. So I'm very surprised at the end of the day that BP's actually ended up, and presumably that's a result of the buybacks. And like you say, I suppose if they've had a bumper year last year, over 5 years they've outperformed expectations, even if profits have come off the boil in the last quarter.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when you say that it's gone down, it's just this the significant amount of profits as a quarterly basis. You've got 3 billion coming through. It's like, wowza. And they're able to buy back significant amount of shares going forward. So yeah, markets were cheering that today. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. Any thoughts, Phil?
Yeah, I think the oil companies, you know, if you look at BP, but also Shell, and then you've got, you know, in Europe, you've got big oil companies with Total Energies in France and Eni in Italy. They're all kind of trying to do the same thing. You know, we live in a world where we're trying to wean ourselves off oil very, very slowly, and they're trying to shift their businesses towards where it's going, which is in different degrees gas, particularly liquefied natural gas and renewable energy. And even though the profits are down quite a lot because the oil price has come down a lot, these companies are still generating lots of spare cash, or free cash as it's known in the jargon. That cash is being used to pay quite big dividends still, but also, you know, buying back their own shares. And like, you know, these companies are on about 7x earnings. And, you know, one of the big criticisms you get with companies and buybacks is that they're buying them back when they're expensive. And I think the oil companies are doing what you should do, is buying your shares back when they're cheap. Whether it drives the share price higher, obviously time will tell. But I think it's quite sensible what BP and the other oil companies are doing.
Cheers for that, Phil. Cheers for that. There, Henry. We're going to go to you, Henry, with your first stock of the day, mate.
Bit of a left wheel from oil companies, but listeners will know I quite like property companies or REITs. Now, my company today is a property business. It's not in the logistics space, so you can breathe easy. I'm not talking about warehouse REIT again. this is a 2.6 billion market cap property management company that operates a portfolio of premium real estate assets in London. They've got a diverse mix of tenants across their estates, including restaurants, cafes, residential properties, offices. And they're focused around the areas of Covent Garden and Lily Square in London. For those of you that can't guess, this is Shaftesbury Capital. The ticker is SHC. That's SHC, Shaftesbury Capital. Now, the business has had a bit of a torrid time in the last few years. Anyone that's been following them will know they've had enormous write-downs. COVID hit them particularly hard with office vacancies, lack of transport, lack of travel, and plummeting commercial valuations. And as a result of that, a few years after COVID, they're now sat on a price to net asset value of just 0.7x. So you're buying a pound for 70 pence effectively. And the big question for me is whether these premium assets are ever going to return to being valued as premium assets. I mean, for those of you that have never been to Covent Garden, it really is a fantastic bit of London. Beautiful shop fronts, beautiful open areas. The restaurants are always packed. The shops are always packed. And I think the market is undervaluing some really great property here. And it's sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater with concerns about short-term vacancies in the commercial office space, which could potentially be rezoned. And also concerns about debt refinancing, which I admit are a potential headwind for this company. They've got net borrowing of £730 million, which is quite a stack of debt to refinance. Very small dividend as well, 1.9%, which isn't usual for a property company. The specialist REITs are paying sort of 5-6%, and Shaftesbury Capital, as a result of write-downs and vacancies, has only got that dividend covered 0.9 times. So the dividend's looking a little bit flaky. But I think if they can recycle some of the assets in their portfolio, that there really could be some good value there over time. So listeners may want to go and do a bit of research on them. Thoughts, chaps?
I was going to pick up on the fact that, all that's going on at the minute, and then what we're hearing about is it's layoffs. We've got this thing going on regarding layoffs, and then they're saying actually we're trying to get everybody else back to work, and it's where does the property, commercial property, sit in the middle of that? It's like a tug of war going on, and are they actually losing more tenants than people returning to work? You know what I mean? That's my discussion there. And if they're losing too many tenants or clients using the commercial space, how do then they manage, what did you say, £750 million of the debt if they're not getting the revenue in and the profits to service that debt? That would be my only concern. But I as I've always been told from from I don't know how old I was, you buy a property, it doesn't go away. You buy a car, it rusts. So, buy a property when it's a discount. And if you can pick up choice property around, Covent Garden, Canary Wharf, and then think 5 years, 10 years ahead, then maybe not a bad idea. But the debt thing would get me, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
And
the
I'd
debt
want to see
makes
him with
me
less debt.
slightly
I'm not sure
nervous
what.
as well.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Phil?
I mean, historically, the Central London West End property has been, has made you good money, over the years. There are some, it looks like some reasonable assets here. I think the lack of a big yield would probably put off some investors. I know that REITs, they have to pay out 90% of their after-tax profits as a dividend. And clearly, the refinancing of the debt, interest rates have gone up. Obviously, without looking at it, there's a risk that they're going to have to pay more than they're paying already, which would obviously reduce the income. But the management have got quite an ambitious strategy with this one. I was looking at this one earlier, and they're targeting, rental growth over the sort of medium term of sort of 5-7% a year. Now, if they can get that, that's what they're going to hopefully grow the income stream. It should give the capability to start hopefully paying out a bigger dividend. And we'll see. I mean, the only thing I always think is when you see these discounts to net asset value, you think, which one's right? Is the stock market right and the balance sheet wrong, or is it the other way around? But this is a sector that's been hammered by, higher interest rates. And if interest rates are, maybe starting to come off the top and come down a bit, it might be a share that's got some legs.
Very
Yeah,
reasonable
thank you for that.
points, yeah.
Thank you for that one, Henry. Thank you very much. Okay, Phil, let's have your first one, mate. First one to the audience, please, mate. First stock, where are you going?
Okay,
What's it about?
this is a company that I sort of I've chosen from a customer point of view, which I think is always one of the good ways to get an insight into whether you're looking at a good business or not. And the company I'm going to talk about here is Jet2, which is an airline package holiday company. The ticker, for those who are interested, it is actually Jet2 with a number two, not the word two. And this is a company obviously got hammered in COVID, but has recovered incredibly well. and is now making more money than it's ever done. And it distinguished itself from its competitors by having extremely good customer service and being extremely well managed. And what's essentially been happening over the years is that this company has been taking market share from existing tour operators. You know, Thomas Cook is no longer with us. Jet2 has not played a small part in that. And I think also the other major tour operator, TUI, which has got its own issues and saddled with lots of debt. Jet2, I think, will take market share from them. What they're doing is they're just very, very in tune with what their customers want. And they're not aggressive in sort of over-expanding the business. So they gradually add more seats, more destinations to places like Greece, Turkey, you know, the Eastern Mediterranean, city breaks. They've got a lot of flexibility because they own their own fleet, and this allows them to do things like there's a lot of demand now for what we call variable stays holiday. It's not just going on holiday for 7 days. It might be 4 days or 3 days or 5 days or 10 days. And they've got the ability to accommodate that because of their investment in their aircraft fleet. And more of the passengers that are taking Jet2 are booking package holidays. So before COVID, it was about half the flights were full of package holiday customers. Last summer, that was 70%. And this drives the margin up, because one of the things that people have learned from COVID is that there was this trend in sort of DIY holidays where people booked a flight on, say, EasyJet and Ryanair, and then went on to another website and booked a hotel and did it themselves. Now, during COVID, people got caught up in having terrible trouble getting their money back. Whereas under a package holiday, if the package holiday gets cancelled, you get your money back in 14 days. And all the money that Jet2 takes on board in terms of upfront payments is all ring-fenced. So they generated a huge amount of customer goodwill by paying their customers back quickly without any fuss. So there's a great brand there with growth. They're opening another base now in the UK at Liverpool, I think, next month. So that gives them 11 bases in the UK. They're adding about 12% more capacity for this summer, and they're filling it better than they were last year. So bookings are good, because a lot of people will do everything they can so they can have their week away in the sun. You know, it means so much to people. And I think that underpins the business. So I think this is a business that is in a very good place. The momentum in the business over the last 12, 18 months has been great. Analysts have been steadily moving their forecasts up, which is what you want to see. But you see, the thing that I like about this, along with the sort of fundamentals of the business, is that it's still on like less than 8 times earnings. And it was on 6 times earnings in September. So it's re-rated a bit from September. But this was a business sort of pre-COVID that would trade on, a mid-teens multiple. And I think that if you look at earnings forecasts for the year, not this year, March 24, but say March 25, there's not much growth in there. And I just wonder whether that's a bit too low. So I think there's a good opportunity potentially for forecasts to go up. And then also the valuation of the shares to go up as well. And I think it's a really good company on a really good valuation. Like it a lot.
Cool. Thank you very much for that, Phil. Have you got any points or things you want to raise regarding that, Henry?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a business I know a huge amount about, but the My perception of the airline industry is that they've never really been great for shareholders. Very slim margins, massive losses. They seem to swing wildly between losses one year and profits the next. And I've always avoided it. It's been for me a little bit like retail. I've never really wanted to own it. Having said that, I'm very surprised that it's derated so much from 15 times earnings down to 6 or 8. And to me, that could potentially be an opportunity because if it was, like you say, rated more highly, I'm not sure why it's come off the boil so much. In terms of their business strategy, I really like a lot of what you've said there. It makes sense to me from a consumer point of view. I can understand what they're trying to do, and I can understand why that's probably good for me as a shareholder as well. So yeah, really interesting business. Thanks for raising it.
No worries, no
Bill,
worries.
can I, Bill, can I ask you? He was looking at the chart here. It's gone from £10 in towards the end of November-ish up to 13. So, you've got 3 months, 30%. Was that part of fuel price, energy costs, oil, fuel coming down, or was that just a re-rating per se for them, or did they come out with some good numbers in the last 3 months?
No, they've, you know, they. The numbers have been very reassuring. I mean, if you actually look at
Right.
the trend in analyst forecasts over the last year, they've been moving up. The last trading update, they sort of held it, as there wasn't really an upgrade. But they're
Okay.
on course to post some very good numbers for the year that ends in a couple of months' time. The other thing you've got to remember with these businesses is that they're very seasonal. So they make all their profits between March and September, and actually during the winter they'll make a loss. But actually, the extent of that loss, how you manage that, has a big say on the overall profits you make for the year. So the lower the loss that you make in the winter, the better it looks for your overall results as a whole. And they've been very good at controlling and bringing down those losses, basically by
Yeah.
getting more people, on their planes going to ski resorts and stuff like that. And also, the market is much more favorable now. There's competition that's come out of the market. They've got a big competitive edge because of their fleet. But also their, the brand, the actual customer perception of the brand just goes from strength to strength, really.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Yeah, hence the reason why the shares are near their 52-week high, not far off
I mean,
there.
I speak also from experience of actually having used them as well.
Haven't been a customer, yeah.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
which is
And
good, like you say, first-hand experience.
it's been great.
Yeah, primary research is always good, mate. I'm gonna give you guys, ladies and gents listening, a stock which I've just saw and researched because of the headline that I saw, which freaked me out. I think Phil and I have been going backwards and forwards with this for about 5 or 6 years, about conversations about pensions and the fact that we all need to save, put money away in our ISAs and elsewhere, even under our beds if we don't trust the markets. But I saw this alarming headline which says, and I'll read this out for you. State age pension of 71. Yeah, there's discussions now that they're looking to, potentially they're going to have to raise. So basically, in 1925, when the state pension age was set at 65, right? So nearly 100 years ago, the average person born, sorry, man born at that in that decade. Live to be 56. You see what happened there? Get your pension at 65, you're not going to make it 56. The average woman lived to the age of 59. So how many people are actually getting their pensions, right? And that's via the actuarial tables, right? So most people didn't live to collect the pension. But I saw this and I thought, statement-wise, the UK and other aging populations will have to increase their state pension age to 71 by 2050. That's a ways off, but made me think, oh, here we go again. You know, any excuse to give them cause to increase the pension age for everybody. And the stock in question that I looked at, I thought, I wonder if this is going to be interesting as I rubbed my, top lip. XPS Pensions Group. Ticker symbol XPS. Share price at the moment, £2.05. Market cap, 422 million. 52-week high of £2.45. 52-week low, 147. And it's sitting in the middle of that at the moment at 205-ish. PE from Sharepad, 14.8. Yield from Sharepad, 4.7, sorry. And forecast to grow, 9.7%. So I'm looking at that and thinking, what do these guys do? Says it on the tin. XPS Pensions Group is the largest pure pensions consultancy in the UK, specializing in actuarial and investment consulting administration. The company's business combines expertise, insight, and technology to address the needs of over 1,000 pension schemes and their sponsoring employers on an ongoing project basis. Now, the bit that I like about this is that they use quite a lot of tech to get the job done. And gone are the days of boring, I'll say, insurance persons. Not used to be an insurance man all the time, knocking on people's doors and people just, throwing hot water over them and saying, sod off, we don't want to buy your insurance. It's a bit more tech savvy now. A lot of stuff is done face to face, but they use a lot of tech to do their crunching of numbers. So looking at their numbers from half year in November, they basically said high levels of client activity, new wins, inflationary fee increases, and bolt-on M&As drove 23% growth in the group's revenues to 94.5 million. Organic growth of 19% year on year. So 23% growth there. PBT, profit before tax, was up 19%. The divvy was increased by 11%. So for me, they are a company that are showing others that they're pretty confident regarding what's happening to them going forward. And they also have a progressive dividend policy, which you always want to be looking for, incremental increases in your dividends going forward. And anything over a 10% is a huge sign of confidence by a board. And we have an aging population. So my view is, irrespective of it being put off till 2050, I suspect it's going to be earlier than that. We get an increase in pension age. There's going to be more work coming forward for XPS. So that's why I brought that one to the table. Guys, what are your thoughts?
I don't know which side of the fence Phil is on in terms of a debate that's been going on for 5 years, but XPS is one that I have been looking at for a year myself, and I've not pulled the trigger yet, but I've been very, very close to it. Really like the business. I've been sat there thinking, why didn't I buy this 6 months ago? I've still not bought it. I like their performance. I like the dividend. I like the way they run the company. I like their growth. They've got a long track record of growth. And like you say, more people are going to need pensions and wealth management, and this money is locked away for decades at a time. It's not like fund management, for example. If you put some money with Hargreaves Lansdown and decide they're charging you too much, out it comes. XPS and pensions, people tend to be very, very sticky with their providers. They don't shift them around too much. And, the older generations tend to stay with employers a long time, and the pots of money that they build up stay there a long time. So companies like SPS tend to have fairly stable revenue bases, in my opinion. So yeah, really like that company.
Yeah, I like the yield on it. I was quite surprised when I was looking at it that it's yielding 4.5 at present, with a view to it going up another 9.5 potentially next year. So you're looking at what? Looking at 5% potentially next year, progressive yield. Who knows? Phil, have you looked at this one before? Any thoughts?
I had a look at it this morning, Pete, briefly. And the numbers look really attractive. You're looking like you're thinking, give me a candidate where I can buy something that's reasonably priced, good profitable business, decent income, growing, then it, you know, it's certainly something that you know, think, oh, I'm gonna have a look at this a bit more. Think on the pensions thing, I mean, it's something that, you know, just keeps getting kicked down the road. You know, the state pension, I think the hard truth on the state pension is that it's unaffordable in its current state. The amount of money, particularly with, like, you know, the triple lock, where it's been going up by either earnings inflation or 2.5%, whichever's been the higher. And obviously, you've had high inflation and high earnings growth for the last few years, and that's pushing the state pension bill up to, you know, serious amounts of money now that the government really can't afford. But no politician's going to stare down your television set and say, do you know what? You're going to have to be 75 before we give you any money, which is possibly what it would need to be. So the onus then obviously goes back to individuals to look after themselves. And save for themselves, and also companies. I think one of the important things is that, you know, with auto enrollment, you know, companies are obviously having to enroll their employees into pension funds, either provided by themselves or by somebody else. And you can see that, you know, the fundamental support for XPS here is pretty good, you know, pretty decent. There's going to be a lot of companies out there that are going to need, particularly sort of small and medium-sized companies, that are going to need some advice on how they look after their employees and how they manage the sort of pension provision. My only hope is that the government stops messing around with private pensions in terms of, you know, things like lifetime allowances and stuff like that, you know, trying to tax people if their pension pot gets too big.
Agreed.
That's my only sort of concern about it, is that the government seems to be, can't really make its mind up, really. I think it needs to encourage private saving, but on the one hand, it discourages it by messing around with the tax on pensions. But no, I this looks a really interesting business to me.
Thank you very much. I agree with you, Phil. It's always easy to come in and attack the people that have actually put some money aside. And I think, you know, like you say, should encourage people to save and prepare for the fact that they don't have to work until they're 65 or 75, because, you know, they say that people are living longer, and some people are, but unfortunately, some people are working themselves into the ground, and they shouldn't have to do that if they can actually put some money aside that they can actually protect for themselves rather than getting it ambushed every couple of years by whichever government's in. Right. Henry, we're going to take a little break here, mate, for you to give us a little very quick update regarding what's been going on with your Centrepoint charity fundraise, mate. What's been happening? What's the total? Who's been donating?
Oh, Peter, Phil, I'm absolutely over the moon. And to everybody that's listening, I've been blown away. You guys are doing a fantastic thing here. We're making really, really great progress. Not even 2 full months through the year, we're 1 month through the year, and we're 18% of the way towards our target, ladies and gentlemen. £900 raised, 800 of which has come from 23 supporters. I exclude myself from that figure if you're wondering who the missing one is.
You can exclude me as well,
Peter's
mate.
also, yeah.
It's a brilliant start, though.
It
Brilliant
is
start.
absolutely fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. Please do keep it up. I just want to read out a few of the comments we've had. For those of you that don't know, every year we've done the podcast, we choose to put it out for free. And as a contribution for the work that we put in producing the show, we ask that listeners donate a few pounds to a charity of our choice each year. And this year, we are raising for Centrepoint, which is the UK's leading homelessness charity. Now, since our last episode, we've had another batch of donations in. We've had Scrumpy Triple Two from Twitter, £10 and £2.50 gift aid, Lovely comment, inspirational monologue. He described my previous comments as, so thank you, Scrumpy. Gentlemen, you're doing a wonderful job with the podcasts, helping investors and importantly those in need. We've had £10 and £2.50 gift aid from a child of the 70s. Great charity helping some of the most vulnerable children. Thanks again for the terrific podcast. Sanjay Korea, £100 and £25 gift aid. Thank you for all
Wow.
your support and help. Great cause. Good luck with the fundraise. We've had £5 from David Major with £1.25 gift aid. I agree with the idea that if each of your 3,000 listeners donates £5, that will generate £15,000 for the charity. So here's getting the ball rolling to encourage others. Reality is, I'll be donating more, but keep that quiet.
Brilliant,
Thank
brilliant.
you
Love
very
that.
much, David. You're a gentleman. Jeffrey Allen, this is going well, Henry. £10 and £2.50 gift aid. I've loved the interactions on the show. Some great content with food for thought. I always feel compelled to research during the show with left field tips. Thanks a lot, Jeffrey. We're going to keep the tips going. And finally, our friend Matthew Gregory. Matthew, you'll be pleased to hear I'm going to say this is Matthew with one T. For those of you that follow me on
Ah, that
Twitter,
Matthew.
I keep
Yes.
getting it wrong and putting two in. I am eternally apologizing for it. £30 and £7.50 gift aid. Thank you, Matthew. Great podcast, great charity. Kindness and investing advice all in one place. Keep up the good work, chaps. Thank you
Brilliant.
very much, everybody. Marvellous.
Thanks, everybody. And please do have a think about making a donation. Henry, you're going to have to give us the link again, please, mate.
Absolutely. For those of you that are internet connected, it is www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPeaksChallenge24. That's Twin Peaks Challenge 24, all one word. And you'll see a nice picture of the Twin Peaks logo and the Centrepoint logo. And you can pop your donations in on that page. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Right, we're going to move straight on to Phil. Your second stock of the day, please, mate. What would you like to share with us? And whereabouts in the world is this particular company?
So this is a UK company, very well-known UK company, and it's Diageo, which is the
Guinness comes straight to mind.
yeah. So DGE is the ticker. Home to, this is arguably the leading global spirits brand, spirits business with, some fantastic brands in terms of, Johnnie Walker Black Label whiskey, Gordon's gin, Tanqueray gin, Captain Morgan rum, Smirnoff vodka, Guinness.
Yay.
Yes, your rum. Yeah. I
I
thought you were a Mount Gay man, Peter.
am, but I can't, you can't go past saying that one. I've got to drink that one as well, Phil. Come on.
Obviously Guinness,
Guinness. Oh,
Guinness
yes.
beer,
Yes.
amongst many other things, tequila brands, truly global business. And this is a company that not so long ago, if you'd have asked me, would I be happy to own Diageo shares, for the rest of my life, or would I say to even to my 18-year-old son, stick that away for 40 years in your pension fund and you'll be okay. I probably would. Now I'm not so sure. It's a business which a lot of very well-known investors, people like Nick Train, Terry Smith, own. It's a play on premiumization, wealthier middle classes in emerging markets buying more at market spirits and drinks. But I think there's grounds to question that now. The company's had a pretty horrendous profit warning relating to It's Latin American business, and it seems that they sold too many bottles of whiskey and bottles of tequila to distributors who have now got too much, and they need to cut back, and therefore the sales, they're not buying as much this year, and the profits are coming down a lot. But I think generally there's a wider sort of question to be asked here, in that we've seen a lot of weakness among sort of luxury brands. You know, the LVMHs of this world gone through a bit of a rough time, and people are cutting back. And I think also as well, you look at it in terms of the health side of it. I don't know about you guys, but I sort of meet more people now who are actually giving up booze, and you wonder if that is a trend that could accelerate. I was reading an article. I think it was on Bloomberg a few weeks ago about how like American wine companies are like struggling because they haven't got like a younger customer base coming through because they're just not drinking. And I just think that this is a stock that has been touted as sort of ticking all the right boxes in terms of very high profits, easy to understand, great brands. But these are all great. These are all the things that we look for in a company and in a share. But I think if without growth, without having the confidence that this is a company that can churn away and grow sort of 6-7% year in, year out, I'm sort of very much up in the air about this. Now, I know it's not, I know a lot of our listeners want shares to buy or ideas to look in that they can buy, but I know a lot of people probably looking at this because the shares have come off lot, and it could be one that you could do well from if profits recover and sentiment recovers. But I just think that there's a little bit of doubt here. I don't know what you guys think of. And it also, it's still on quite a punchy rating. It's still on 20 times earnings.
I think, sorry, Phil. I was going to say, I've got a feeling that alcohol is going to be viewed much in the same way as tobacco by future generations. And we're at that tipping point where you've got a lot of people that consume it, and we're all aware of the
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Another set of brands. Maybe they reposition themselves into health drinks or food manufacturing, or who knows where they could go. But it's a big global business with a lot of good names in it. And so although profits in the short term might be a little bit maybe weaker than investors would like, I think, sticking with it might not be the worst idea in the world.
Yeah, I think that's fair point, Henry. I think the other thing as well is that if you're looking at like Scotch whiskey and sort of premium Scotch whiskey that's sort of aged 10, 12, 15, some of the stuff's even older than that. That's not a business that someone can set up overnight.
No.
You've got to set aside huge amounts of stock of maturing barrels of whiskey.
Yeah.
And that is a great barrier to entry. And I hope this is a business that can get back on track. But I think there's a lot of negative sentiment towards it at the moment. They've got a new chief executive, and she has got, she's inherited a very tricky situation, and hopefully she can navigate the company out of this, because we need global champions in the UK. And
We sure do.
this has been something that it's certainly something to look at. It's something that I thought I was pretty confident about. And I think if you're thinking of buying this, just really go and kick the tires.
Okay, the only thing I wanted to ask you, Phil, regarding it and Diageo, were are the so-called superstar fund managers still holding it in their portfolios?
As far as I know, yeah, as far as I know. It's been very painful to own.
They must be looking for a turnaround as well then. Okie dokie.
I think,
All
Pete,
right then. I'm sorry, go
just
on.
finally, Pete, apologies for going on this one. I think if it can get through the next 6 months and reassure investors that this Latin American issue is they're getting to grips with it, I think the shares could kick on from there. My guess is that they probably won't go much in the short term.
Okay, I was going to throw in a little pun there and say that the Latin American stuff was that they sold too much and created their own bottleneck, but it might have been a wasted one. So
Oh, gosh.
couldn't
Get back in your
resist.
corner.
Okie dokie. Right, I'm going to throw one in here very, very quickly. I'm conscious that we're doing our time in again, and then we're going to go to you, Henry. This one is a food related one, and this pricked my interest going back to, middle of last month regarding a full year trading update. And the company's name is Bakkavor. I may have butchered that. Ticker symbols BAKK. And the market cap is 538 million, 52 week high of 126, 52 week low of 80 pence, current price 93. So it's near the low of the last 52 weeks. PE of 11.5 from SharePad, yield of 7.6, so that's interesting again. What do they do? Bakkavor manufacture and market a wide variety of fresh prepared food products across a range of price points to meet people's convenience aspirations. You know that word, marketing word? No matter what the meal occasion or budget, their products are grouped into four product categories: meals, salads, desserts, and bread and pizza. In the US, they focus on fast-growing, fresh prepared food retail market, specializing in meals, meal salads, dips, soups, and sauces. And in China, which is the fast-growing area there, as I'll talk about in a minute, they produce food to go products, including fresh cut salads, wraps, sandwiches, soup, meal salads, fresh cut for a number of fast-growing Western food service operators, including, this is where it gets interesting, Starbucks, KFC, and Pizza Hut. So nice big brands which are very, very popular in the China area. Right. Okay. Full year trading update for 2023. Profits, net debt, leverage, all expected to be didn't ahead of market expectations. Like-for-like revenues was up 5.3%. US revenues dipped a bit by 8.4%. China was up and bounced significantly, was up 32%. And their outlook for 2024 is very, very encouraging. And basically, they were saying on their trading update Momentum is building in all three regions, with refreshed priorities providing clear direction to our local teams, which will underpin delivery in 2024. 2024 revenue is going to be slightly ahead of 2023, and we expect volumes to remain subdued given the continued challenging consumer environment in the UK. So they're looking to offset the UK's environment with another bounce back in the US and continued accelerating growth in China. So I just thought that looked very, very interesting. A couple of the heads there, slightly heads, significant growth coming in China, kind of continue that sort of momentum, open up a bit more in China. And I just thought it's one of them stocks that I see moving about, and it's a fair size FTSE 250 company. I thought it's very interesting, and I'm you know, convenience food, people going to work or not going to work, you know, people at home on the move, grabbing snacks at various fast food outlets. Opportunity for growth, maybe. Thoughts, gents?
I really like it. It's come across my radar before, I think perhaps because of the yield. And I then discounted it because I wasn't sure. It got this retail twang to it where consumer tastes can shift, and all of a sudden, I use Mr. Kipling's as an example. I don't think they make Mr. Kipling's. I think that's Premier Foods or someone. But you know, one minute people love Mr. Kipling's, the next minute they're all having mince pies, profits fall off a cliff. What do you do? And I wasn't sure how susceptible it was to that. So I moved quite quickly on and put it in the too difficult camp. If people are interested in the retail shares, in the retail sector, you know, I think that it's got a more defensive angle to it because you're always going to have people buying food brands. And it seems to be quite internationally diversified as well. I think you were just talking about their Middle East, was it? Middle East division?
China and US.
China and US, which are very, very different markets. So one to go and do some research on, I think, but an interesting name, Peter, one I've seen before. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Any thought, Phil, that you've been buying anything out of KFC recently or Pizza
No.
Hut?
I think that's what would worry me a bit about this company,
Okay.
in that you're selling your products to very big multinational quick service restaurants, fast food companies who've got a huge amount of buying power. And I suppose the concern would be is that, you know, they would always hold the upper hand. I've
Yeah.
not looked at this business before. My guess is it doesn't make particularly high profit margins.
It doesn't, no.
Probably for that reason, who it's selling to. There's probably quite a lot of competition in it. And I think the concern is that, you know, you get a business like this that when you've got thin profit margins can become zero profit margins, you know, if you get to like a really difficult trading environment. You know, if you get to a situation where, you know, you need to pass on higher costs or stuff, and you ring up, you know, Pepsi or KFC and they say, oh, you know, can you pay a bit more because we can help us out here? Sometimes they will, but there might be like a delay in it. And so it always reminds me of, you know, like own label stock in the UK called McBride. Have you come across that one
Yes. Yeah.
that makes like
Yep.
own label, you know, beauty products, washing up liquid, that kind of stuff. And they're selling to like really powerful big supermarkets, and they always seem to get the rough end of the stick. And I suppose that's what I would need some sort of comfort on this one.
No, I fully get that. I mean, it's sitting near its 52-week lows for a reason. Looking for a catalyst. That ahead of market expectations helped a little bit, but the next update, 3 months' time, will tell you where it's at. So yeah, just thought really interesting research idea for people to have a look at. But yeah, I agree with some of them concerns you've raised as well. Both of you have raised. Okie dokie. Henry, your final stop, please, mate, because we've got time
Absolutely.
constraints on this, mate. So go for it.
Well, it's a $56 billion market cap company, which is a leading supplier of high performance mixed signal products. If you can't guess who it is, it is NXP Semiconductors over in America. The ticker is NXPI. That's NXPI. 20% return on capital employed. And when I started doing my research into it, this was what caught my eye because back in 2019, they had just a 3.7% return on capital. And I was doing
Okay.
some research to try and figure out what's caused it to skyrocket because it seems to be a long-term trend, this. And actually, the firm acquired a company called Freescale Semiconductor in 2015 and now has a significant market share in the automotive market, where it supplies microcontrollers and analog chips into automotive clusters, powertrains, infotainment systems, and radars. NXP Semiconductors also operate in the industrial and Internet of Things categories, connecting things like fridges and mobile phones and smart lights and doorbells and all the rest of these gizmos and gadgets that we're all buying off Amazon on Black Friday. Now, the company pays a 1.5% dividend if you're interested in the income, which is 3.5 times covered, so plenty of scope for growth in the future. But again, it's another one of these businesses that everybody's talking about NVIDIA, everybody's talking about AI and semiconductors. Nobody is talking about NXP Semiconductors. I've not heard it mentioned once. And the fact that their return on capital is skyrocketing like this says to me they're doing some really interesting stuff. So I think that's a good potential target for people to go away and do some digging.
Yeah, I like this one. I mean, you threw it in there at the last minute. I was going to just jump in and say there's got to be some AI in there somewhere. You know what I mean? But automotive and AI with all the stuff that's going on in cars, future tech of cars, every sensor, everything AI, autonomous vehicles. Yeah, massive. And it's still the sort of, when you look at the size of what Nvidia is now, it's the sort of company, given their history, they could just, with the share price move year to date and their market capitalization at the moment, they could just go like that, irrespective of the size, and just buy an XPI, just
Yeah.
like that. So yeah, it's a good co. I love that it's a tech company that you've chosen, Henry, rather than some random backwaters company that you normally pick, which are all good, by the way. But AI tech, yeah, nice one. One question, Henry, regarding this. Do you think that it's ahead of itself right now regarding how much it's done the past 6 months, share price wise? Because
It
every
has.
single US stock seems to be so frothy, and it's like, oh, it's never going to win. It's never. I'm looking and going, oh, everyone's banging on now about Nvidia hitting $700 a share. Given it was, in fact, it was nearer to 400 at the start of last year. It's like, wow. And how long does this continue, this momentum? That would be my concern. That's my only concern. And I still want to buy some tech stocks, but I'm looking and waiting, thinking, looking and waiting. Thoughts,
It's
mate?
actually more or less flat. It's not skyrocketed the way that Nvidia has. Now, there could be a reason for that, or it could be overlooked. I don't know for certain, but it's definitely not had the insane boom. I mean, you look at someone like Microsoft, and haven't they just put on another $1 trillion in market cap in 3 months or something? Ludicrous. It's
Meta,
not done that.
Nvidia, and Microsoft have definitely popped a little bit more year to date. But you're saying that this hasn't done it in the past 6 months, 3 months. Okay,
No, it's not
that'll be what I'll
skyrocketed.
well I'll investigate then. I want to find out why, because that might be very interesting as to why that's not moved, if that's the case. But yeah, Phil, have you any do you ever look at tech stocks in the US, mate? The ones that are off the radar?
Not the ones that are off the radar. I've looked at Nvidia a lot over the last few months. I'm a fan of Nvidia. This one's interesting. It's sort of very on a very reasonable valuation. About 15 times earnings. And then you ask yourself, well, why? And I suppose there is a bit of a clue if I open up SharePad and look at the forecast. There isn't much growth. There isn't much growth being forecast by analysts. Now, they might be wrong. They might be wrong, and actually the growth is going to come through. And I keep getting back get back to this. You've got to have growth. It's very difficult without growth for a share price, short of a takeover, for example, to move appreciably higher. And I would think that if they can give a bit more confidence on growth, then they're on a very undemanding valuation. And I think things like Internet of Things is fascinating. Because I don't know about you guys, but you know, virtually every sort of gadget you buy now is like connected to your internet. It's unbelievable how many gadgets and things that are connected to the internet and will be connected to the internet going forward. And that's something I think is quite interesting about this company. And also, you know, the automotive side of it, you know, cars are becoming, you know, sort of walking bits of, you know, sorry, not walking, rolling bits of tech. And there's more and more stuff going into cars. So it's really interesting, Henry. Definitely worth having a bit of a dig, I think.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you ever so much. I will be looking at it as well, Henry. If it's sitting there slumbering, it's going to surprise the markets. We know what the markets are like. They're like an upward surprise, and then it'll just have momentum and take off. So definitely worth having a look at. Right. I just want to say a big thank you to all you ladies and gents that gave us feedback on YouTube. If you have not subscribed yet, please do on YouTube. And the feedback we received on Twitter. We're trying to keep these towards an hour, which we've just about done on this one. We're going to call it a wrap there. Please, please, please give us your feedback. Please give us some shouts regarding getting Phil onto this podcast, and he'll be back again on a regular basis. Please give us a shout out for Henry Viola here at HT Viola. Phil's not on Twitter, but you can find him on SharePad and leave some feedback there if you wish. And we'll look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. That's the end of Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 120. A big thank you to Henry Viola here. Thank you, Henry. And Phil Oakley, thank you ever so much for joining us, Phil. It's been an absolute delight to have you on here. And
for
me,
thank you
all. And I'll wish you all a very good weekend when you get to listen to this. Bye-bye, chaps.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.